The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Oh, here we go. So password time. Yeah, come on then. Here we go.
Okay. All uppercase words with a space in between. Tom Price is a bastard. So what happens now?
Well, now we just start recording.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and I'm in your account. That's it.
I'm terrified.
And we just chat and you sort of sweat.
And, yeah.
And then people listen to it and enjoy your pain. That's really...
Oh, yeah. Gosh.
Okay, welcome along. It is my mate... Oh, I nearly forgot the name of the fucking podcast then because I'm looking at... It's because I'm looking at something you bought. I nearly said, this is Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, which is not what this is, but that is something you bought. But we'll get onto that.
It's, I didn't.
This is the other thing that happens, and we'll get onto this, is people just totally forget things they've bought and have this weird instinct to deny.
How far back do you go?
Welcome to My Mate Bought a Toaster. My name's Tom Price, and that is the voice of the fabulous comedian, actor, wonderful writer. Her brand new book is out now. We'll get onto that. Andy Osho, who is already denying everything, preparing to be a politician, maybe.
Right. Why? Well, I have no idea what you're talking about. But in real terms, I can't think of anything that politicians say, but I didn't do it.
All you've got to do is pinch your forefinger and your thumb and point them at me. That's the politician.
Oh, God, the knuckle point, please.
I want. So how far back do we go was the question you asked before I started talking a lot. Mm. Well, the answer is, Andy, we're going back right to the beginning.
What?
We're going back to the year 2000.
Holy hell crap.
Okay. You are at this point living in... I see you're working for Blue Turtle Pictures. Is that the name of your company?
Bloody hell, yeah. So I was the general manager of Blue Turtle Pictures.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. What did that involve, being a general manager?
Generally. I was sort of in charge of the staff and training and hiring and stuff. This is like in my days working in post-production, which I did up until about 2003.
Okay, right. So this is pre-showbiz as a sort of pre-talent in that case, before you were on the right side of the camera and microphones. This is when you were...
Well, I was on the side of the camera. Who's to know which side was right for me? But I was desk-based and working in a little sort of post-production basement in Soho.
Well, you were a manager, and I can tell you were a manager, and you took your job very seriously because on the 29th of November 2000, one of the first things you bought, the Essentials of Employment Law.
I didn't. Oh my God. Well, I can guarantee that I didn't read that.
I tell you what, if anyone's got a damp patch, put this down because that is dry.
Woo!
Oh, I mean, should we click through and have a little cheeky look at this?
Oh my God.
A textbook for students of personnel and human resources. You were a manager, you see. A reference for managers, a reference source for managers.
Yeah, I think what was happening was the accountant allegedly was embezzling and we were going to have to get rid of her. But I ended up leaving before the whole thing got resolved. But yeah, she was defrauding the company, allegedly.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. So you never saw what happened next. And when you say the accountant, are you referring to yourself in the third person?
that's my superhero name. The accountant. No number too big.
She's the embezzler.
No, she really was. It was another person separate from myself who was, she was sort of claiming holiday pay when she was in or something weird to do with holiday pay.
Right.
Because at times she was a freelance, and I don't think freelancers got paid holiday pay at that time. So, and then she would be doing other stuff when she was in doing accounts. So it was taking her like three or four times as long to do the company's accounts because she was doing her own stuff.
I mean, worryingly, A, that sounds like moonlighting, and B, that sounds like how I approach absolutely everything. Do you find that? Like literally as I'm doing this podcast, I'm sort of writing an email about some other bloody Radio Wales thing or something.
I do remember when I, one of my first reception jobs, I remember like writing jokes and plays and all kinds of things when I was on reception, because most of them took their calls directly. So it's just like, what's a girl to do?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And so did you know then when you were sitting, so you were sitting on a reception somewhere, this is a previous job, just beginning to piss around, sort of basically making yourself laugh, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it's a bit arse about face, because I had a proper career, then I started acting, and that's when I started doing like reception work and bar jobs and all the rest. So it's kind of weird, like going all the way back to those sort of elementary jobs after having 10 years, after a 10-year career in post-production, like a proper grown-up job.
Right, oh, so this post-production was by no means a kind of, oh, well, I've just arrived in the big city, or I'm just arriving in Soho or whatever, and I'll do this while I'm waiting for my actual true calling as an actor and comic. This was actually a proper, like when Jimmy Carr went and worked for BP.
Did he? What did he do? Because he was quite, in marketing, yeah, or something,
quite
wasn't
successful
he?
In BP, and then suddenly went, oh, I know, I need to be a comedian.
I'm really funny. Yes, exactly that. Because I went to Ravensbourne, which is, it's a design school. And so one of the schools there is a TV production school, teaches you how to make TV shows. Mm. It does lots of other stuff. It's got a fashion school and blah, blah, blah. Mm. Anywho, I went to the TV school and so graduated, in theory, knowing a little bit about how to make telly. And so that's how I ended up going into post-production and doing that for, 10 years.
10 years. And at no point did you think, Mate. Oh, God, for God's sake, I need to be a turn. I mean, that must have been very, very frustrating to be administering and, helping helping all the people on camera with emails and stuff. That must have pissed you right off.
Do you know, it didn't occur to me. I was just in my job. Do you know what I mean? But I was a kind of live for the weekend type of girl. So I was always out, like always down the pub, always partying at the weekend. And so I suppose I sort of didn't really think about the possibility of doing something else. This was my job. This is the world I was living and working in. It didn't really occur.
You were a weekend girl. Andy, that's your next book. Andy Osho, Weekend Girl. I mean, I've got so many questions.
All the stories.
Yeah, that's my main question. Can you tell me the story?
Yeah, no.
Okay, well, here's something else that to me suggests you weren't a weekend girl, more a retired in Somerset, middle-aged man. You bought Inspector Morse Volume 1, wait for it, the soundtrack in December 2000.
I don't think you're in my Amazon account. I genuinely don't. Oh God, I don't remember that. Why would I do that?
The soundtrack to Inspector Morse. That's a weird one. There's got to be a story there.
I honestly, Tom, I don't remember what that's about. We're talking 20 years ago, mate. Well,
you were a weekend girl. Who remembers what happens on the weekdays? Maybe you bought that on a weekday.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. I probably bought it during the week and then, tried to reset and, tip the balance more towards partying at the weekend. I think that's probably legitimately what happened.
Picturing you in some really cool nightclub in the early noughties. Mate, have you got that new album by Inspector Morse?
So it's called Soundtrack.
It's called Soundtrack. It's absolutely banging, mate. Colin Dexter, yeah? He's an auteur.
Pete Tong got Endeavour. Oh, my God. I genuinely don't know what that was about. Sorry, it's not very helpful for this. I've got recollection of any of this stuff.
But this is what we learn on this show time and time again, is just the amount of crap that we buy, and we just all these items unloved, forgotten in our distant past.
Yeah.
Distant past. It'll pop into your head, you have to text me when you suddenly remember. It will.
Oh, God.
At some point, it'll pop back.
That'd be hilarious.
All right.
I want to know.
2001, nothing bought. 2002, we're back on it again. You bought 9 things over the year of 2002.
Okay.
A little bit of Polyphonic Spree. Love a bit of that. Groove Armada. Yeah. This is all excellent, excellent stuff. What else have we got here? The Oxford Illustrated History of Theatre. This is July 2002.
Right. So. Yeah, there's a sniff now of like thespy sniff going on.
What is a thespy sniff?
I don't know. I'm just like, there's interest, but I haven't completely committed, because I remember I was going to a drama school, kind of. They were doing that sort of poor school type vibe, classes in the evening and at the weekend so people could work during the day.
Right.
And my work during the day was post-production.
Yeah.
And so it was really hard, because the drama school was very sort of fame, like you've got one, you know, one chance and this is it and da 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 and you should commit and blah, blah, blah. And during the day, my bosses were like, can you just get on with your job and stop fucking around with this drama school bullshit? Yeah. So I was really caught between two worlds. So in the end, I had to decide, like, what are you going to do? When once the drama school thing had finished, I was like, well, I've got to commit to this. I can't, post-production and being a post-production supervisor is not going to work in tandem with going to audition. So that's when I let all that stuff go and started doing, you know, the reception work, the bar work. I was a tequila girl at one point.
Oh, wow.
Hands down, worst job I've ever had.
Oh, wow. You didn't have, did you have the tequila glasses across in that as if they were ammunition in a Wild West type scenario?
Yeah, it was horrific. I couldn't bring myself to wear them like across my body. So I sort of found a way to wrap the harness around my waist, and so I had the sort of shot glasses around my waist, like a holster type of thing, but like on my hips sort of thing. But they gave us these like short gray mini skirts, little tight waistcoat things. I mean, I had the legs for it then, so I was fine with that. But it just, oh, it was horrific. And I, because bear in mind, I'm 30, right? And so all the other girls are sort of like early 20s and yeah, fun. And they don't mind going up to guys and ruining their evenings by giving them this rancid, you know, cocktail of whatever it is the bar makes up. Because it's not even neat tequila.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The people that I work for, they would mix it with this gunk like lime and Tabasco. So if, you know, heartburn and a hangover and would make you vom probably. It's like the, and they would charge like £3 for something that's probably about 50p.
Yeah, yeah.
And you just, like people having just a perfectly nice evening. And then we were expected to sort of go up and try and hard sell this muck to them. And so I lasted about 3 weeks.
Right, okay. Tequila Girls is one of the strangest thing, like in terms of one day having to explain to kids what things are. Well, a tequila girl, basically you just go up to people who are having a drink and offer them another drink.
Yeah.
You know, it's you wouldn't do that in a restaurant. You wouldn't be like a prawn boy and just go up to people. Prawns? Who wants some prawns? And I've already got some. I'm having a sandwich. Prawns.
I do like that comparison. I mean, it is exactly that. But also, like hawking in a bar.
Yeah, and the kind of crowbarring in, it's a bit sexy. Sexy prawns. Hmm? It's,
yeah.
Oh, it's just the worst. My only tequila experience was on my stag do, and I drank something like 6 tequilas whilst wearing my school uniform. And then the next day, and this is an indication of what a sad middle-aged life I've always had, I threw up on a golf course pints and pints of tequila. That's my life.
I love that you went and played golf, or tried anyways
on my to play.
Well, I don't know. Were you playing golf? Or were you just lost? You just woke up on the golf course?
I don't remember. It was during the time I was hacking into people's accounts and making them buy more CDs. So
Now it literally all makes sense. Sometimes you gotta spice up your life in the bedroom. How about you go online and buy a sexy costume? Love it at this age doesn't have to be doom and gloom. It's time you felt so fine, you buy a sexy costume.
This is interesting. March 2002. I'm fascinated by, and we'll talk about this more, but this idea that you have got, and you do this again in your life. I know this because we're mates, but you do this again. You've got a very successful thing going on with, you know, the post-production stuff, and you just go, handbrake up.
Yeah.
I'm going to walk away from security and salary and office and future, and I'm going to go and sell tequilas so that I can audition for stuff. It's just fucking mental. It's brilliant, and I admire you so much for doing it, and I really mean that, because I'm terrified of everything. So I find it incredible. You know, you've got a pretty, and this is interesting, this purchase in March 2002, this sums up what I know of Andy Osho. So you've got the complete idiot's guide to buying and selling a home. So they've got this hard-nosed business person making sure that you know exactly what's going on, and right? And you've got plans. And then equally, in the same purchase, a little light on the spiritual laws, the 7 spiritual laws of success. It's almost like you've offset your home buying guide with a little bit of spiritual glitter just thrown in. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Is that the Deepak Chopra thingy? Yeah. So yeah, I think that was probably my first like spiritual woo-woo kind of book. But also, a girl's got to find somewhere to live. You know what I'm saying? So I think what happened is I'd broken up with somebody.
Right.
and he'd low-key ripped me off because we owned a place together, but that's okay. And so he gave me some money out of, well, he didn't give it to me. He owed me some money out of
He gave you your money, yes.
You see, yeah, exactly, pretty much. And so less than my money, but whatever, like I say, I'm okay with
right.
it. Anyway, the point is I had a choice. I was either going to go traveling, and then I started to have this feeling like, I don't think that's the right thing to do with this money. And so I decided to buy a property, and it was like my first purchase by myself. And oh yeah, I'm so, so glad. I mean, like looking back now, I'm so glad I made that decision rather than doing the traveling, which would have been epic and awesome. Mm. But I just, the buying that place gave me a foundation for when I did do this crazy thing of like, you know, turning my back on sort of security of having a career and all the rest of it, and sort of taking a leap into being an actor. It was just one thing that was just secure in my life. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. But also, you know, because I'm doing the spiritual woo-woo bit, I do need something that's a bit more tangible and sort of safe. So
it's always important that you're doing the woo-woo whilst you're on a ladder, whilst you've got your foot on some sort of property ladder. By all means, go woo-woo, but just that, you know, that is solid advice I'd give to any kids out there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Have a gap year, but just, you know, do have a flat.
but run a hedge fund while you're on that gap year.
Fucking hell. You probably can on an app now. All right, so you know, you're following your dreams. You're going, as you say, to quote you, a bit woo-woo. You're getting on the property ladder. We're moving into 2003. And we have got a course in miracles, Foundation for Inner Peace. Nice.
Oh, gosh,
Jesus Christ, yeah. 23 quid that cost.
I know.
I mean, that would conflict with my inner peace straight off the bat.
Well, and it's not a fun read. Ha! It is like, it's the size of a Bible, like really, that really sort of small print, thin pages, like a Bible. Mm. And it was written by these two people who, like, I think in the, like the 60s or 70s or whatever, like 1960s or whatever, like not, so it's a very, you know, recent book.
Yeah.
And it's not a fun read at all. And it's supposed to be like really like, eye-opening in terms of like spirituality and stuff like that. But there's a woman called Marianne Williamson who's sort of, she's sort of analyzed it basically and written a very thin book that's much more palatable,
right?
That I, you know, I recently found. But Course in Miracles, it's quite well known like in like spiritual terms or whatever, but gosh, it's not fun to read.
Because it's just so long and dry and boring.
It's long and dry and boring. And I think they're trying to write it a bit like biblically, but it's quite hard in the 70s, I suppose, to sort of evoke that sort of pre-Christ type of writing style.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's pretty dull. So I never finished it. And in the end, I threw it away. And then you'll see if you scroll forward to 2000 and I don't know, 18, I buy it again.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, you know, it is biblical in the sense that it comes back from the bin, you know.
Right. Okay. There is that. Yeah, it's the second coming of the Course in Miracles.
Okay. All right. So looking for inner peace. Now, this is a fascinating book. I've never heard of this. In June 2003, you bought a book called For Coloured Girls Who Have Considered Suicide. What is this, please?
Yeah, this is a book that it's a book of poetry,
right?
And you know, just beautiful writing. And it was introduced to me at when I was at Barking College. So I did my A levels away from school because I really, really had to get away from school, but I wanted to carry on my education. So I went to Barking College of Technology, and what would it have been? In drama, I think they, you know, introduced us to loads of different texts, and this was one of them. And it was just like, what is this amazing writing? So is it in Tozoki Shenge?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. It's got amazing reviews. Amazing reviews. Loads of.
I mean, it's like classic African American text. It's like very, very well known. And I suppose that's why in drama classes that would have been given to me.
Mm.
Because it's, you know, text written for, it's black monologues for black actors, actresses.
Yeah, yeah. What's really enjoyable about this is already we can see by 2003 how your life has changed, because it's you know, in 2000 you're buying things like Inspector Morse, but also Ali G or Simon Sharma, A History of Britain box set, like, great. But then by 2003, look at this sort of, you know, horizons are being stretched here, right, artistically and creatively. Having just said that your horizons are being beautifully, you know, stretched, and you've got all these interesting artistic things happening, December 2005, greatest hits, Robbie Williams. So, you know, yin and yang.
Wow, I don't remember buying any of this music.
It's Christmas here. It's Christmas time. Maybe just blame it on a rogue relative. Or, to be honest, I love a bit of Robbie Williams. There's no.
Me too. Yeah. I just don't recall it. I remember the Polyphonic Spree. Mm-hmm. That I remember getting bang into them. But yeah, Robbie. Cool. Yeah. I'll have to dig that out. I didn't know I owned that.
Yeah, you did. All right, let's move on then, Andy Osho. We're going to crash on through now. Let's just bang on forward. We're going to go to 2007. And by this point in 2007, you've bought in January, the beginning of the year, Step by Step to stand-up comedy by Steve Allen and Greg Dean. So have you started? Hello. You've already been doing stand-up by this point, haven't you?
No. So I had been, I would have been in the middle of doing Logan's course.
Yes.
You know, stand up and deliver.
Right. Logan Murray. Brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. So I started that in, when would that have been? November of 2006.
Yeah.
And I think we would have graduated because it was 3 months at that time. So it would have been, you know, I would have still just come into the end of it, I guess. And I think my first gig was in March of 2007.
Right. Okay. Oh, wow. So this is bang on when it happens. The reviews of this book are fascinating. The top reviews had 5 likes, is by Kerry Godliman.
No way.
And it's a review that I wrote when she was on this very show.
Uh-huh.
So this is getting quite meta here on My Mate Bought a Toaster. I'm about to read a review that I wrote on behalf of her that goes, bought this, made it to Live at the Apollo. I mean, it took a decade, but hey, this is where it all started, got there in the end. So
that is fantastic.
There you go. It obviously works. But then to be fair, Osh, I mean, you bought this book, and when did you make it to Live at the Apollo?
2011. I think.
So if I were to write a review, seeing as I'm logged into your account, could I maybe say, bought this, made it to Live at the Apollo, and it only took me 4 years, Kerry Godliman? I mean,
oh my God. Right, and then sign it TP.
Yeah, sure. Bought this and made it to Live at the Apollo.
Kerry, love you.
Apollo. Obviously, everyone loves Kerry Godliman. I mean, genuinely. And it only took me 4 years. Love you, Kerry. This was written as part of the My Mate.
Good. Yes, exactly. That's exactly podcast. What I want.
Check it out now on all good podcast platforms.
Exactly, a full disclaimer.
Andy Osho not being an asshole. Tom Price being an asshole.
Yeah, right there.
Richard and Greta gonna make your lives better today
if you'll subscribe to our podcast.
You know, it's all about how to get the most out of your partner.
And we're partners.
So we know all about it.
It's good. Get it wherever you want to get it, when you go and get it from your podcast place. Richard and Greta.
You know?
Very good. So 2007 is when you started. So was that when because we were with the same agent back then, and I remember watching you, did a gig together in Wimbledon, and you did this brilliant bit about going,
Oh, yeah.
Noise you made when you were a kid, and I was like, oh, she's good. So simple, so beautifully observed. It was really well done. I was like, oh, God, another person who's better than me at stand-up.
I can't bear it.
So 2007, the stand-up has begun. 2008 then, we've got some interesting things here. Again, we see how curious you are, Andy Osho. The new media monopoly, this is January 2008. Also 2nd of January 2008, the extreme future, the top trends that will reshape the world. I mean, do you just have a big hit of marijuana at the beginning of January and just like sit there like a bong and like, oh man, I need to know about the extreme future. What's going on here, please?
I know exactly what that was about. So I was trying to write I wanted to write a film or play called The Last Christ, and it was set in the future, and it was about this dystopian world, somewhat like we're in at the moment. Oh, and and it was this idea that there was Christ-like figures had occurred throughout our history, and the last one had manifested, and it was about trying to save this individual.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to realistically create what a dystopian future could look like. So I thought, oh, these books will help. Didn't read any of them.
of course. But again, this is what we do on Amazon. We rack up a load of things for this kind of imagined person that we want to be. And
exactly.
Take them on board. And
Yep. And there's, at least I've still got them. Unlike Course in Miracles, I kept them just in case.
Yeah. Also, you have a real January habit, Andy, because you don't buy much stuff throughout the rest of the year. But in January every year, you buy real sort of life directional stuff. 12th of January 2009, you bought The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
Oh my God. Mm. Didn't read it. You know what happened? I think I'm an Aquarian, right? And I don't really hugely go in for the whole astrology thing, but there is something about in the description of Aquarians that we do like expanded thought, and we're quite idealistic.
Yeah.
It's an air sign, so it's very much about technology and thought. And, you know, the internet is, if you're going to ascribe it to a particular star sign, it would be Aquarius, right? So all that sort of, those big thoughts about what we can become, I do genuinely find all that stuff really interesting.
And is that why...
And not enough to read the books I buy about it, obviously, but...
Yeah, so good. I'm an Aquarian, but another part of being an Aquarian is that we can't be asked.
Exactly. We just want to watch a documentary about it at some point on Netflix. Yeah.
But I do find that interesting, and it does chime with what you do. You know, you do find yourself in a position where you kind of go, right, changing lanes, changing gear, moving on. And a lot of people don't sort of have that sort of panoramic breadth of thought to kind of go, I'm going over there now. You know, we all end up, whether we like it or not, whether we're creative or not, we all end up in a bit of a tunnel. And you consistently seem to not do that. Like all the books you're buying, they're really interesting. Like I've never seen half these books before. And there is a habit on this show. You see the same books again and again, especially when you're interviewing comedians. You know, you see the same stuff. But there's stuff like this. Zero Limits, The Secret Hawaiian System for Wealth. What the fuck is this now?
Yeah, that one. I'm looking back because I've got those sorts of books on my top shelf, but I can't see that one. I don't know if I read it.
The Secret Hawaiian System for Wealth, Health, Peace, and More.
That sounds nice. I might read that.
Yeah. This riveting book can awaken humanity. It reveals the simple power of 4 phrases to transform your life. It's a very quick book in that case. Just 4 phrases. Move on, guys.
Done. It's a leaflet.
Oh, hang on. Oh, there's a review. Oh, dear. Oh, do you want it? Oh, God.
Yeah, go
oh,
on. Did I write
no,
it?
No, this is Kerry Godlimen again.
One phrase, not very good.
This says, I was sadly disappointed and gave up reading this book after Joe Vitale's introduction. I recently heard about the Hawaiian teachings of Ho'oponopono and was really excited to read more about it. But if, like me, you are more interested in learning more about the power of emotions than making millions of dollars, then this is not the book to read. It saddens me how so many American self-help authors exploit ancient wisdom for material gains.
I know what this is about. Okay, so this guy who wrote this was one of the contributors on The Secret. And I remember a friend of mine recommended this book, and I remember starting to read it and just feeling like I didn't like the vibe of it. And I think it might be because of what that person's saying in the review, because all this sort of self-help stuff where the emphasis is on wealth and getting stuff and material, you know, gain or whatever. I'm not interested in that. I'm more interested in expanding my horizon and having some sort of mastery, as it were, over the mind, because, you know, our minds are so... oh dear, they're naughty sometimes, telling us things that aren't helpful, you know. And so to be able to have a healthier relationship with that is more interesting than having loads of money, because I've had loads of money and been really miserable. So yes, I know that that's not the answer.
This is the thing. And I always go on about this. The number of times doing studio warm-up, I have, you know, I've met comedians, millionaire comedians coming on the show, they're fucking miserable. And I know comedians are often miserable, but it's true. I've never met a happy millionaire. I know that people will be racing to prove that I'm wrong and present me with a happy millionaire. But there's something about the drive being towards money and then presented with the money and then going, meh.
There's been a study that says, I mean, the figure varies, but that there's a number, like in terms of a salary, that once you go beyond it, your happiness won't increase any further. So basically up until this point, and sometimes I've read it's 50 and sometimes I've read it's £70,000 a year, but that once you get to that point and all your kind of material needs are taken care of, your happiness doesn't really increase as that number increases. Because, you know, at the end of the day, as you get more money, you invariably will incur bigger problems. Because money brings problems. As much as it brings like luxury and the ability to buy cool stuff, it also brings problems. Yeah. So like paying other people and tax and all that kind of crap. So to people who don't have it, they'll obviously say, yeah, right, I'll give it a go anyways. But
I've had times when I've earned big chunks of money for adverts and stuff, and I see the money land in my bank account, and I have known that the money was landing that day, and I've gone to my bank account and logged in and looked at it and wondered why I'm feeling numb, sat there looking at the number going, nothing's happening.
Yeah, why aren't I jubilant?
Yeah. Mad, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's true. And for me, I mean, I'm scrolling forward a bit to like 2012, where I was really unhappy, you know, and I was at the peak of anything a stand-up comedian at that time would have wanted, and very miserable.
Yeah.
And very rich.
Yeah. Well, you were. So, you know, you did Live at the Apollo in 2011 and just...
And 2012.
And 2012. And you fuck... I remember it was on when we were living together in Edinburgh in 2011. And was it on during that August? Because I remember everyone just going on about how amazing you were on it, or not long after.
It could have been.
It was around then.
Yeah. I can't remember because I did two shows at Edinburgh, and the first one I did McIntyre's Roadshow. So maybe, yeah, Apollo was 2011 when we were there and I was doing all the single ladies or something. Yeah, something like that. Anyways, but yeah, they were well received, and they were kind of universal things that I was talking about. So they've been repeatable. They've aged well.
And yet you walked away from it.
Yeah. So what I did was my plan was just to have a break. That's why I went to the States. I was just like, I just need a proper big break, because what was happening is I was sort of taking little sort of days off here and there, or taking a weekend away or a week away. And I was just exhausted throughout it, and exhausted when I came back, and it was telling me something bigger was going on. And so I went to the States just to reset. And I started doing a little bit of stand-up there, but it was quite demoralizing. LA stand-up scene is a dud. Yeah. Like, they need some help. They need a 99 club or a something.
Everyone basically does 6 minutes of tried and tested cracker gags, don't they? That's more or less the truth.
And there's a lot of people, a lot of actors and people who just want to advance a different career and use stand-up to do it. Mm. So you'll see a lot of people who have got real amazing stage presence and terrible material, and it just used to make me furious. As I said, I've never had an impulse to heckle a comedian apart from Martin Besserman, but like I think every comedian like agrees that that's appropriate when he starts saying like the weird stuff that he always does.
I think you've complimented him by calling him a comedian. He doesn't deserve heckles, just restraints.
So you know, it just drive me wild, like listening to these people. I was just like, write a joke. But anyways, who am I to judge? But I didn't give up stand up as such. I just sort of drifted away, kind of like Jack in Titanic. I just pushed stand up off the driftwood.
I know, but it was you know, I'm sorry to come back to it. I'm a bit obsessed with money, but you had a lot. You know, you had it at your feet. You were good to go, man. You were a made woman at that point. It was like, right, TV shows and big presenting gigs were about to head your way.
Yes, and right.
So, Jesus Christ, how was that moment when you phoned your agent and went, listen, thanks for getting me there. I'm just going to... All the best.
You know, they were very generous about this. And, you know, we came to an arrangement whereby it could work me being there. But, you know, the other thing that I noticed was that I was, you know, TV producers were very comfortable having me on an already existing established show, but nobody really wanted to take a punt on me having my own vehicle.
Yeah.
And I sort of looked ahead to what would be possible through me staying in stand-up in the UK. And it just seemed so narrow and limiting. And I looked at the people who are further on down the line, looked at what they had, and I thought, I actually don't want that. I don't want to be on this carousel of, panel shows. Yeah. And being, you know, when you do those panel show pilots and it's just like, this one's about dogs. And you know what I mean? And it's just like, it's news or it's dogs or it's music or it's films or it's something. And it just means we all have to sort of do crazy things. And I just didn't want to do it. And they're all great shows and they're really entertaining and all the rest of it. But they just, I realized they weren't for me. And that's why I had to walk away. So
I was so happy to hear you say this because it justifies me never being asked on any of those shows. I feel I feel a lot happier that I've never done them because I sort of genuinely, I would love to try and do those things. But I know that actually I'd end up in the same position as you and just feel completely, I don't know, you see... Yeah, that like you say, they're all brilliant and great and wonderful, but they're not freedom. They're not the freedom to do what you've subsequently
exactly.
gone on to do.
Because what my fantasy was a sort of Daniel Kitson type career, and that's not the path I was on. Mm. And, you know, where he just does his thing. He is just funny and he has his own shows and he's not hankering after anything, any sort of fame yeah. or TV slots or trying to get on Apollo or anything like that. He's just doing his own thing. And that was my sort of... Because I see stand-up, and I think a lot of people do deep down, see it as a craft and an art form. And that's what I wanted to really explore. But I just didn't give myself permission to do that. I can't blame anybody else. I walked that path. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And then in the end, I sort of realized, oh, if you keep going down this path, you're going to get further and further and further away from any kind of craft-like experience in terms of your creativity.
Yeah, but it's a gilded path. This is what I find so, like... I'd just be going, great, that there is, you know, comfort and security. And to have the courage to jump off is something else. And to go to LA. I mean, how many contacts did you have in LA? Just heading out there, seeing what would happen?
None. My agent had got me management. So that was literally the only thing. I didn't know anybody. Thankfully, I'd been out there on this sort of networking week, and a lot of the people that I'd met, actually, they all found themselves in LA at the same time. And so that was my... That was my initial friendship group.
Yeah,
I had no one else. And then occasionally Brits would come over, and that was really lovely and reassuring. Like people like Eric Lampen, he came over at one point, and then, you know, Tori, my agent, came over. Oh, no, actually, she wasn't my agent at that point. She came later. But yeah, so there was a lot of people coming backwards and forwards. And then eventually through doing classes and just going out, you end up meeting people. But I was terrified when I got there because I was just like, I don't even know what I'm doing here.
Amazing.
I just knew that I had to come.
I mean, but I find that, like, you know, day one, it's 2 p.m. in the afternoon, you're in LA, all your friends and family and colleagues are in London, and yeah. you're sitting there. What the fuck is going through your brain? Like, I'll write a joke, I'll make a phone, I'll email an agent. What, genuinely, what are you thinking?
I went through like three or four different spaces. One was, what the hell am I doing here? And I would literally be crying on Skype to my mum, just going, I don't know what I'm doing here, but I know I'm supposed to be here, but I don't know what I'm doing here. And then I'd get like super busy and just try and hustle and just get myself involved in things. And then I would like try and learn as much as I could and try and do the things that people were telling me you should do while you're in LA. Because there's a lot of people who are in LA trying to tell you how you should do being in LA. And
yes.
A lot of it is bullshit.
That's a real LA
thing. Have you not found that?
Yeah, yeah, it's a real LA thing.
And they base it on their own failures. And it took me 2 years of being there to just go, oh, ignore those people because it's not working out for them. So that's why they're telling you why that thing is difficult or why that isn't going to work or why you have to do it that way.
Yeah.
Like, well, I went to one course and the woman was telling me, the person leading this course was saying, talking about crashing auditions, like basically turning up to an audition uninvited.
Oh, geez, Louise.
And how to do that. And I was just like, yeah, 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 turn up uninvited. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you know what I mean? You know, when you just like don't know anything, you're like, yeah, yeah, that sounds like a really great idea.
You went proper, proper Muttley then.
But what a ridiculous thing to suggest to actors. Like, how unprofessional is that?
Please tell me you never did that.
No, I never did it. I'd just be chronically embarrassed. I'd just apologize if I got there. And even if I did get an audition, I'd be, I'm so sorry about this.
I remember seeing you out there. Do you remember we went for drinks out there when I was out there briefly?
Oh, I don't. When did you come out?
Oh, I was out doing a Torchwood convention.
We had drinks with Matt Kirshen
and James Barkman, and you and me and a couple of other people. And I just remember thinking, what the fuck is Andy Osher doing here? What the fuck is she up to?
Yeah. But what it gave me, I mean, I did get some nice jobs out there because obviously Lights Out and Shazam and things like that happened as a result of being out there. Yeah. But I think the big takeaway, I had the time to write my book, but also I just learned so much and I grew. Yeah. But I did. I grew as an individual because I had to figure this new place out on my own.
Yeah.
And I had to figure out what I really wanted. I really had to ask myself some real questions about where do you want to get to? What are you after here? Because if it's not stand-up, then what is it? And what do you want your life, your work life, your professional life to be? So I had the space to really ask myself those questions and get the answers. So it was invaluable in that respect.
Mm. You're doing it again, January 2012. January syndrome, the David Icke guide to the global conspiracy and how to
now
it.
Wait, now here I can explain.
Okay, that's the end of the podcast. Thanks for coming. Thanks for listening, lizard people.
David Icke. I was just curious because I'd watched a couple of his videos and I just wanted to get to the bit about the lizard people. And again, it was, I just didn't get that far. He's quite angry. And yeah. I like that he asks the questions and joins dots in an interesting way. But I don't want to learn about what might or might not be going on behind the scenes from someone that angry. Because obviously anger is fueled by an agenda, or an agenda is fueled by anger. So.
Yeah.
That's not going to work. But I just thought it'd be quite cool to have a David Icke book.
I think I'm all for it. And similarly, he's got, I think two of his shows are on Amazon Prime. They might have been taken down now. But these live gigs at Wembley, where he's playing to, 30,000 people.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And
I just love the fact that he was like, one minute he's doing Grandstand and the next he's sort of like calling out the Illuminati or whatever.
Swansea 1, Illuminati 6. It is absolutely fucking batshit. And what's really interesting about it is that I put it on thinking I'm going to be impressed by it. I'm going to go, God, he's got good performance skills. God, he's got a magnetism. God, he's got something that's luring these people in. And it was a pure absence of anything, a vacuum of content and charisma.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I watched about 15, 20 minutes of this thing and he was just sort of doing this weird patter. Like, he was just like a very shonky Noel Edmonds. It was really, really mad. And these people were lapping up and screaming and just going for it.
Wow.
But he wasn't, I can't even quote bits of it. He wasn't even going, yeah, this government, we all know the Queen's a lizard. He wasn't even saying any of that stuff. He was saying nothing. It was, it's extraordinary. It's extraordinary. The guy's, he's surfed a wave of paranoia and fear, but on a surfboard made of nothing. There just seemed to be nothing there. It was so weird. So weird.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I mean, I've got it there. It's largely holding up some other bigger books.
Yeah.
So that's its main purpose in my life.
It's doing its job.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm glad he's got a function. All right, let's skip ahead now, Andy Osher, because we are running out of time. Mm. And it's a fascinating. Mm. So when did you come back from LA? When did you come back here?
Well, I was just going backwards and forwards. So I came back to do Super Shoppers and things like that. And but I properly sort of decided to move back 2019.
Right.
Because I just had this feeling like my time there was done.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't based on anything particularly. Oh, you know what it was? I left my agent.
Ah,
and
okay.
Yeah, I had this big plan, or management, because they have managers and agents
in
the States. So I left my manager and I was like, I am going to get such a great agent now, because it was those guys that were holding me back. And so Tori was now my agent at this point in the UK. And so we were sort of approaching all these, WMEs, all the big agencies. And they were all kind of like, meh. And either they wouldn't have a meeting or they'd have a meeting and they were very, meh. And I had this great meeting with this one guy who was like, I think he was at ICM or something. And he was just kind of this, like the agent in Entourage.
Yes.
He was like the opposite of him. He was almost like an accountant. But he spent like the first 10 minutes trying to casually lean back in his seat and get his feet up onto like a... it was such a strange thing to watch. And I was like, is this a test in some way of just watching him sort of knock? His legs weren't long enough quite to reach the thing, so you'd have to sort of shuffle down in his seat to... I was like, why is this happening in my life right now? Anyway, he didn't sign me. And no one signed me. And so I was agentless.
Yeah.
And I was glad that I'd left the people that I was with. They were great, but just not right for me at that time. But I didn't have another agent. So it's just like, well, I'm not auditioning for anything. And so...
Why am I here?
What am I... Yeah. And so then it was really clear. Okay, now you're done. You can... And I noticed that my life was getting quite small because I couldn't be bothered to go and do things. Like I was going to the odd screening and, you know, meeting up with a couple of friends every now and again, but I really wasn't taking advantage of being where I was in the world. You know what I mean? Like going to see all these beautiful places and going to Yosemite and all the rest of it. I was just like... Because I think I was... Emotionally, I was already on my way back home. So it was just a case of actually getting the removal men in and really doing that.
Formalizing that return.
Yeah.
It's quite, I mean, that sounds like, you know, following a, not destiny, it makes you sound like a complete lunatic, but feeling like you were being told to do something. Like, okay, here we go. Like you're going with the flow in this instance.
Yeah, I mean, I do reference off how I feel about something. I do sort of make logical choices, but usually the logical decisions come after the feeling. Because I didn't plan, I will spend, you know, 6 years in LA or I will become a stand-up comedian who gets TV work and blah, blah, blah. Right. It was just like, oh, this feels fun.
Yeah.
I'm liking this. I'll carry on. Oh, I'm not enjoying this anymore. Oh, this makes me depressed. I'm going to stop, you know.
And back I come.
yeah.
All right. Well, in that case, let's, we've got you back in the UK now, thank goodness. There's all sorts of things going on in 2019 on your Amazon purchase history. Let's have a quick look through some
of popping off.
Well, it certainly got busier, you know, 34 items in 2019. That's quite a lot. I mean, it's not, you know, you got some French Thieves essential oil, October 2019. Ooh,
that is so good. It's like this oil
right.
that's made of, I think it's like eucalyptus, cloves and something else. And thieves used to use it. They used to, when they grave robbed back in the day. They used to put it on themselves to stop themselves getting diseases from the dead bodies. Isn't that great? And so this chiropractor recommended it to me. She says, like, you know, there's so many germs and diseases on a plane or whatever. When you're going backwards and forwards all the time. And there was one point where I was just flying backwards and forwards to LA, like 6 or 7 flights in a couple of months,
yes,
or whatever.
Yes, bad for you. So it gets you ill, definitely.
Oh, God, yeah. And so she said, put it on the soles of your feet. I mean, it reeks. It's the most pungent oils you can get, like eucalyptus and clove and peppermint or something.
Right.
But and so even in COVID times, obviously I know it's not going to stop me getting it, but it's just really good for your immune system.
Yeah.
So I just put a little bit on the soles of my feet sometimes and then, protected.
It's an interesting selling point. This is a scent designed to overpower the smell of decaying corpses.
It's not for the smell, it's the disease. It's to help you grave rob. That should be the marketing.
Such an appropriate scent when you're on a flight to LA. I mean, it's literally couldn't be better.
I feel for the people around me because you get so used to certain smells that you don't think like how awful they must smell to people that aren't familiar with them. So sorry, anyone that's been on a New Zealand LA to London flight recently.
I love Air New Zealand. 17th of August 2019. I mean, you know, August 2011, there we are. We're doing Edinburgh together. You're on live at the Apollo and Michael McIntyre's roadshow. August 20th.
I just need to interrupt and say, like, our household with James Redmond and you and me was just the best. I had the best time that year.
It was my favourite Edinburgh. It was
mine too, for sure.
I went back in 2014. I had a miserable time.
Yeah, because we weren't there.
It wasn't you guys. We just had, it was a good blend of personalities. It really was. It worked really, really well. I'm glad you said that because I felt the same way. It's good.
Lovely.
But anyway, so at 2011, August 2011, you were doing that. August 2019, Indirex Flea Spray.
Now, what has happened is I know what it is. There was a local cat that kept coming into my house.
Right.
And it had been abandoned by the people that used to live here. And I have a cushion on my seat and this cat just was not playing. It would, every time I got up from my desk, it would sit in my chair. And then I turned the cushion over and there was all these little somethings.
Oh God.
I was just like, what the hell? Because I'm not this cat's owner, so I'm not doing flea treatments and all the rest of it. But maybe nobody is. So I got the flea spray and I just sprayed everything because I was just like, this is gross. Because this is where I sit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And on the other side of it. So what happened is after that, the cat got one side.
Right.
And then I got the other side. So if the cat, so every time I got up from this seat, I would turn the cushion over so that the cat could have its side. Oh. And then when I sat back down, I would have my side of the cushion.
There's something magical about cats. Dogs don't do this. The way that cats just sort of come, they wander into your life. They physically wander into your life, present themselves, and then one day they go. It's a beautiful thing.
It just adopted me. Yeah. And I think it was just like, this house mine. So it didn't matter who was living there. The cat's just like, my house. Oh, okay.
It's so nice. So. It's so nice, sort of spiritually fulfilled, but at the same time, practically managed with a little bit of flea spray. Beautiful.
Yes, exactly.
I can tell that you're writing away here. January 2019, you've gone for the 3D Shiatsu neck and shoulder deep kneading massager with heat and vibration therapy. One of those sort of big scarves that have got the moving rotating balls inside so you can massage it. Is this because you were writing the book?
This is because I have constant back and shoulder pain from probably bad posture or whatever, but a friend of mine recommended it. I think I was on a Skype with him actually, and I was like, what's that around your neck? and then he sent me a link for it. I like got it the same day, and then I bought one for my mum as well. It's just magic.
Does it work? Is it good?
Oh, it's good.
Oh, well, great. We'll share it. I'll share it on our Twitters at ToasterPod. Good. Excellent.
Yeah. No, I'd definitely recommend it. And also, I don't use the heat part of it because I think that's overkill. But like just the massagey bit, I can feel it now just getting right into the bits of the shoulders that get knotty.
I get my bits are the sort of fatty muscle around the neck, just above the shoulders where the neck begins there, the real base of the neck there.
Also, yeah, because you can just move it. And then it's got these sort of armhole bits so you can put your wrists in there and then pull it tighter so that it sort of pushes down into the bits that you want to really get into.
And also because it comes down, the front of it comes down over your front, so you can actually load it up with tequila shots as well. So if you're a sort of middle-aged tequila girl...
Which I am. Once a tequila girl, always a tequila girl.
My matey bought a toaster.
Right, let's have a quick look at your lockdown 2020. All sorts of, I mean, this is where we get really domestic here. We've got some mirrors, we've got some weed killer, quality masking tape, zinc sash window fasteners, twin pack. I mean, this is all great stuff, Andy.
Yeah, this is a homemaker's Amazon order list, isn't it?
Yeah, love it. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, I'm nesting.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. You got a pop shield with spring-loaded clip, which is working because I've not heard a single pop today. So,
very good. Go. Yeah, this is all the home voiceovers and whatnot that we have to do now.
I bet you were glad when lockdown happened that you were here and not still in LA, weren't you?
Oh my God, so much. So much. I've got friends who are still out there and like Brits that want to come home, and American friends are just like, this is nuts. Why aren't people, you know, the fact that wearing a mask has been politicized and all this sort of stuff. So thank Christ I came back.
Yeah, exactly. And then 2021, the last few weeks, let's have a look, shall we, before we finish today. There is, we've got to find something good to finish on. This is perfect, Andy.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
Well, it's just perfect. The 29th of January, 2021.
Okay.
You
2 days after my birthday.
2 days after your birthday. Oh, it's too beautiful. Oh, I love it so much. You spent £13.98 on Asking for a Friend by Andy Osho. Have you bought your own book for your birthday, Andy?
I feel like I always start with this, but here's the thing, right? Here's what happened. I wanted to see when everyone's pre-orders would arrive.
Is this why you bought two copies? Is this why you bought two copies, is it?
I just thought I might as well, instead of just buying one, I might as well buy two. But what I wanted to, because you know, because I wanted to see whether the pre-orders arrived for the 4th of Feb, which is when we said the release date of the book was, or would it arrive? Would they be dispatched?
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah,
on the 4th of Feb, and then therefore arrive on the 5th or the 6th, depending on which.
We're back to the person working in management at the beginning of the show, aren't we? You're testing out systems.
I do you know, that is me. I do like to, you know, those things of don't a big sign and a button, don't push this button. I will push it because I need to see what happens. And so this is an example of that, of just like, they said the 4th of Feb is the, you know, the release date. I need to see how that works.
I'm going to check up on this. And I can tell you what a wonderful book it is, not because I've read it, but I bloody will, but because my wife was lucky enough to get a proof copy sent to her, Asking for a Friend by Andy Osher, and she absolutely loved it. I remember sitting there and I was like, what are you reading then? What's that then? She said, it's Andy Osher's book. I was like, Andy, fucking, what? What do you mean Andy Osher's book? I went proper high-pitched, and she absolutely loved it and said it was just great. So, you know.
Oh, that is lovely. Yeah, no, that was one of the good things also to come out of being in the States, because a lot of it was written while I was there.
Mm-hmm. Is any of it set in the States then?
Yeah, a little bit actually. So it's about three girlfriends who are having no luck in their own love lives. So they decide to go out and ask guys out in real life, but for each other.
Excellent.
And one of the three starts out, she's in LA, kind of thinking, do I want to live here? She's on a holiday. She's on a vacay.
Okay.
But she starts to have these thoughts, like, because she's just constantly running away from her problems, and she starts to think, maybe this could work. Maybe I could come here and get away from my ex and all the things that I don't like about my life. But she gets hauled back to London because one of her besties has just broken up with her boyfriend again.
I see. Okay, so nice bit of Ellen. And did you enjoy the process of writing it? Is this where the future lies?
I did, and I also didn't many times. It's one of those things where, I mean, I learned so much from doing it, and I thought it was going to be easier than it was, but then that was just me being naive, because just the number of words that's required is, and you can't just do the same one. You can't just go and and then present that to your editor. You have to have different
You've
words.
You've written and 90,000 times. Well, yeah, that's what it worked for David Icke. For God's sake.
But the joy was when it was flowing and when it was working, and then when, you know, you discover things about the characters that you didn't know before, or that it's almost like the book tells you what's next, sort of thing. Ah, yes, of course, that's the next thing that happens, or that character says that because that makes more sense and that ties it all together, you know, when those sorts of things happen, that's joyful. And obviously finishing it was a blessed moment, because you're just like, seriously, you're going to print this.
Finishing it for real, because of course you finish it and then you get some edits and then you get some more edits and all that stuff. So actually finishing it for real, it's such an achievement. It's amazing. And, you know, congratulations on it. And it was so nice to see you on Graham Norton as well the other day. How was that?
That was nuts. I just got a message through from the publishers saying that they'd love to have you on the show. And what's weird is that they said also that they don't normally have authors of fiction. It's usually, you know, celebs who've done autobiographies rather than an actual, you know, a novel. So even that in itself was just like, what? Mm. And because it was the new sort of COVID format as well, I think everybody was saying, because everyone apart from me had been on it before, and they were saying they really like this new, it's a bit more chilled out.
Podcasty with cameras.
Exactly. So, you know, I just did my thing and just talked a bit about the book and was just chuffed to be there, really. I was sort of like the almost like the competition winner amongst everyone, just like grinning and just going, can't believe I'm here.
Wow, it's brilliant. You've definitely not won a competition. You are absolutely fantastic, Andy Osho. Thank you for coming and doing My Mate Bought a Toaster. The fabulous Asking for a Friend is out now. Oh, look, it's 99p on Kindle. But who knows if that'll be the case at the time of this podcast coming out. That is my quick... I have to say that just in
caveat.
Case. Just a little bit of cheeky caveating there at the end. Osh, what a pleasure to catch up. And thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. That was fun.
So, I mean, you know, your life is your own again. You're free to go about your business today. That you're done. This is your...
No, I think I'd like to have you in the background all day. Is that...
And so ends another delicious morsel of toaster. Should be slice of toaster, Tom. Didn't think that through, did you? Get a writer. Anyway, I was just heckling myself there. Thank you so much for listening. That is another episode of My Mate Bought a Toaster. Don't forget, you can go right now to patreon.com/toasterpod and you can listen to the spin-off episode where myself and the wonderful Dan Thomas discuss everything that Andy Usher has been talking about over the last, hour or so. Head over to, if only there was some catchy way of telling you the website address for the Patreon, even though I just told you.
Patreon.com/toasterpod.
Thank you in advance if you get a chance to go to patreon.com. There's all sorts of other bits and bobs as well. I publish a list of all the purchases with the links as well. And there's other bits and bobs as well up there. You can get all of Series 2 ad-free. And of course, you get the latest new episodes in advance. Next week's episode is with the brilliant Athena Cableno, who's just got her own Radio 4 series. She's really, really fantastic, and she is going to be my guest next week, unless you go to Patreon, in which case she's going to be my guest this Friday. Dun, dun, dun. Exciting times. Thanks for listening. You're the best. See you next week.
GreatBigOwl.com.
Hi there, I'm Yasmin Akram. Join myself and my friend Philippa Dunn each week for our podcast, We Heart Worry, a show about cars and their engines. Obviously not. It's a show where we talk about our fears, our worries and our anxieties in a bid to help you with yours. And we just have a laugh as well. So join us. There's nothing to be scared of. I promise.